Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the 20 Years of C327 podcast. A podcast reminiscing about a bygone age in East Suffolk, where there were these places called venues, where people could come and dance, young bands could get inspired, local bands could put on shows, and band members could, well, pull whiteys outside. That's right, in today's episode, I'm chatting via the means of Zoom to former C327 bass player, Adam King, about his Lyon project, his favourite times in the band, and what it actually felt like to crawl out of Britain's longest bar. As always, I'm your host, Richard Trigg, and I just wanted to take this quick opportunity to say thanks for listening so far. And if you are enjoying this series of podcasts, which I really hope you are, please drop us a rating, leave us a review, like, comment, share, all of that. It really does mean a lot. Right, back to the podcast with Mr. Adam King. Adam King, how are you? Where are you? And how's the lockdown been treating you?
Hello, mate. I'm up in Liverpool. Another lovely grey day. And yeah, lockdown's been Can we swear? I can't remember. It's been shit, hasn't it?
Yeah.
2020 was just a bad year generally. Personally, for me, it had a bad start, personal loss, and I've just moved up to Liverpool with no money, no job. So it just got worse from there, really. But yeah, actually looking forward to coming back to Suffolk in half term. First time since Christmas. And yeah, I should say that, you know, life's all ups and downs. And I have got two lovely new nieces who, who've come into this world recently. And yeah, that's been one of the worst things, is like not being able to travel, really, because I haven't even met my niece Georgie, who's in Belfast. So yeah, hoping coming back to Suffolk in half term, and then start of summer I think I'm gonna go to Belfast. So yeah, I mean, things are looking good now.
Yeah,
things are looking better, and I think hopefully for most people.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We should probably talk about Lyon and what you've been doing with that. How's that all going, and when can we expect to hear the record and all of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there's a new track coming out soon, and 4th of June. Weirdly, this track's called 4th of July, but I thought it made sense to get it out before the 4th of July. And yeah, I think I'm just going to drip feed tracks every like 4 or 5 weeks, and maybe the record will come out like New Year.
Are you going to put it out as a record, or?
Well, I think it would just come together as a collection of songs as a record, but I figured I'd kind of drip feed the tracks rather than just dump a whole album for everybody.
It's a bit weird now, I suppose, how people, well, I mean, a lot of people tend to not worry so much about the record and just concentrate like on this kind of single thing. But for me, I find that whole concept a little bit odd, I suppose, because we come from a time when the album was so prolific, just to have it and see it. I don't know, like as a record rather than these individual tracks, but yeah. It does seem to be the thing that people are doing now, concentrating more on sort of singles and playlists. And is that kind of more of the thing, or are you still hoping to put it together in some kind of, you know, like nice package that we would have liked, you know, back in the day?
I think it is just going to be a digital thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think it'd definitely be nice at some point to put it together as like a physical vinyl or something. But I think, yeah, I just think these things have changed so much. And I think there's so much noise, digital noise, not just music, like everything. And when you're releasing music, you're releasing it on a platform which is not just for music. It's about what everyone had for breakfast. It's about what settee you can buy next. It's about everything, and it's all hitting you at once. Trying to juggle that, and
yeah,
I think it's the digital era we're in is amazing on so many levels, but then also you kind of miss how things used to be. You know, like you say, like, you know, a band could release a record every 4 years, and you're like, you're anticipating it, and you weren't really that concerned about it because you knew it was going to come and it was going to be great. But now it's like, if you go silent for 4 years, you're kind of like,
yeah,
hello, so, does anybody remember me?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like the olden days, you could have that time, that period in between, and the press was so important, and it was also exciting to see them bands, you know, that story between them periods in the press and the videos and the lead up to that and concerts and getting on the phone to try and get tickets to go and see whoever it was, Ash at the UEA or whatever.
Mm.
It was exciting. Now it seems, you know, like you say, it's everything is on these platforms, which is not just music, and it's just different time in it, really.
Yeah.
And perfect segue into my first sort of question for you, which was going back to the very start of your time in C327, take me back to your earliest memory or first encounter of the band and ultimately how you remember ending up in it.
Well, a friend of mine, Joe Leftley, he was the original drummer, I understand. And I used to hang around with Joe a lot at his house, and we'd always, you know, we were young and we were listening to a lot of music, drinking beer, hanging out in his bedroom. And, you know, at that time we were going to a lot of local gigs and local bands we were watching. And I remember him playing me the CD, and I guess it would have been Don Steps. Was that the... I don't know, there's probably songs like So Wrong.
You've been the first one, I reckon, right? Like the original kind of demo.
Like, would Lyrical Force have been on there?
Yeah, that was on there.
I can't remember, Beautiful Sky maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's those songs which I just thought they were great. And it seemed, of the time, very fresh and exciting. And Joe, I think, had the conversation, or, you know, he introduced me. I mean, we kind of vaguely knew each other, but
yeah, we did. Yeah,
he put the kind of the idea out there, and then I remember we had a phone call or something, and you and Flatty came around to my parents' house in Holton.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Flatty brought that up in his podcast, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and you came around, and so that was kind of my first memory of it, and you know, I loved those original tracks, and I think, you know, I wanted to get involved in a band that was active, and I'd been watching a lot of bands from our peers and friendship groups, and like,
yeah,
you know, these gigs were like busy, people turning up and like having a great time, and I was like, I'd really like to get involved in that.
Yeah.
So that was kind of what happened. But what I couldn't remember is whether I actually ever played a rehearsal with Joe, because he then left. And I can't remember if we did do a rehearsal, it was probably only one. And but I can't remember if that happened.
Yeah, I can't remember. Maybe one or two, possibly.
Yeah. And I just thought it was quite crazy, really, because me and Joe had always jammed a lot. Yeah, I think we saw it as like a cool thing for us to get involved in.
Yeah.
And then I joined and he's like, yeah, I've left.
Yeah, he left. Like, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. What do you remember about the first show you did with us? Do you remember where it was?
No.
It was in Blue Notes, December 2001.
Ah, okay.
Do you remember that?
I remember playing at Blue Notes, but potentially there could have been a few shows there, couldn't there?
I think there probably was, yeah.
Yeah.
But that first one was with a band called Shoot the Jester, and Ben Lever's band.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember. I remember the flyer, but I don't remember playing it, so.
Yeah, it's weird. So I've been listening to some of the other episodes of this podcast, and I was really feeling like, well, I do really, it's kind of weird because it feels like a lifetime ago, and it's really hard to remember much. But then it is weird, what, you know, something somebody else will say will spur off or bring back a load of other memories, but also like those instances where we have photographs and video, like they feel more real.
Yeah.
But it's only because we have that documentation, you know, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Sadly, maybe it's not sad. I mean, I think nowadays people live their life through social media, and we didn't have that then.
Yeah, it didn't exist, did it?
It's lucky that we have some videos and some photographs, but you know, I think we're pretty just enjoying it really at the time.
Yeah, yeah. What was your favourite ever show that you played with the band?
I think it was like the sort of reunion comeback show we did at the Lady of the Lake, because I think when we were, how many years had that been since we'd played a show?
Like seven, maybe?
Yeah. So it felt like a really long time. And I think prior to that, like, we were really driven and worked hard as a band. And I think we were hoping to achieve a bit more than we did at the end of the day. But I think when we played that show, made me really appreciate what we did have, because it's like, holy shit, all these people, like, it made it seem more important, because people turned up and remembered us.
Absolutely,
yeah. And it's like, I think you can easily take what you build locally for granted, because, you know, and other projects I've been involved in since, and seeing other local bands, and you know what, we're not to sort of bigging our own selves up here, but what we achieved isn't as easy as people think. It certainly hasn't been in other projects I've been in,
and yeah, no, 100%
other mates bands, you know, but all, you know, maybe it's a sign of the times as well, like people just did go out to shows back then.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And so, like you said, like, sometimes you can, when you're just busy in the moment, you're not really worried about, you know, photos or videos, or at least we weren't, and you can kind of miss it. So, like, I think that's almost the same. Like, we're doing all these shows, like local shows, and you kind of miss the fact, okay, well, you just took it for granted somewhat, and then of course 7 years later put on a show, like, is anyone going to turn up? And everyone turns up again, and then you can kind of go, that was that moment where we got to appreciate that.
Like, yeah.
So I completely agree, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that kind of buzz as well, because I remember we all went to your house in Lowestoft.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And I think we had some food, and yeah. I think we were all feeling pretty anxious. I mean, yeah. I definitely was. And then, yeah, to turn up to play that show was, I guess it was, yeah, a bit of a buzz from maybe expecting much less in terms
We all tried to not drink, if you remember. And I can't remember, maybe I was with you, but we all got like taxis back to the venue, and I remember running into Asda, getting a beer and having it inside my denim jacket, because we said we weren't allowed beer. I remember sitting in the back of the taxi. I know Johnny was in there as well. And I was trying to open this can in my pocket to secretly drink it on the way there. And I remember just everyone being quiet just at the moment he went, psh! I was like, oh, and there's a, who's got a beer? And then just drinking the beer, and yeah. Mm. That was good though. It was an anxious 20 minutes going from my house back there with everyone.
Swoosh time, podcast time, see-through style.
Talking of shows, we've also played some really weird shows, really odd bills with some really odd bands. But what do you reckon the strangest show you ever played with the band was?
It was kind of the era as well. I think like promoters were just always really looking for like really eclectic lineups, but it didn't always seem to work from the audience's point of view. And I think we played a gig in Leicester, and we were kind of put on. I mean, obviously Johnny Raps. I think we put on with spoken word artists or something like that, and it was just
right.
It was just a bit of a weird lineup, and I think the spoken word people were local, and they'd brought a lot of following, and then we kind of turned up. I also thought the Rock Garden gig was pretty weird. I mean, it was fun, but yeah, I felt like people didn't, I don't know. I mean, we obviously had some people there.
Yeah.
But it seemed, I think it was a song with the film sample in it.
Oh, yeah. The Axel F thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, High School Killer.
I just think some people, I think what it was, because I think, it was kind of a music venue / restaurant, and some people were there to eat a meal, or have I got that right or wrong? And
I think some people
walked out.
I'm not surprised.
I think it was one of those places where you come and go, you know, have your meal, listen to some music, and, you know, there's a whole array of bands.
In fairness, I'd walk out if I heard that song now.
I mean, it's all a bit hazy, but yeah, that definitely, we definitely played some weird, eclectic gigs.
We definitely did. Do you remember that gig you put on, which was, I think it was us and some drum and bass DJs? I'm not sure if there was any other bands playing.
Ah, Down in the Tons.
Yeah, that was it.
Three Tons Cellar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that being pretty odd.
I always liked that little venue, but I think we were maybe a bit too big a band. I used to go and watch like John Buck's trio in there quite a lot, and it was normally quite good fun, but I think... because there was like seven of us at the time, wasn't there?
Yeah.
We had Julie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remember that being a bit weird. There's just like a massive drum and bass collective there with all their friends. Yeah. And then there's a bunch of us weirdos.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were funny times though, weren't they?
Podcasting, See-Through 27. A little bit like casting when you're birding, but with less bacon and less fish hooks.
Who was your favourite band that you ever got to play with or shared a stage with, and who had the biggest impact on you with bands we played with?
That's a really tough one, actually. I'm just trying to cast my memory back. After I think about this, I'll probably be someone else, but we played a few gigs with the Brownies, and I kind of know that what they're doing must have resonated with me, because when I started promoting gigs, like, they were one of the bands I booked. So
yeah,
I think they were pretty cool.
Yeah. What See-Through song do you remember having the strongest emotional connection to?
It's a tricky one. I mean, I think the original songs, which got me into the band, which I didn't actually have a creative part in, probably some of my favourite songs, like Lyrical Force and Beautiful Sky.
Yeah.
But the, I think one of the new tracks, Stargazing, is something I'm proud of, because just having that input, really, like sending, like just something I recorded on my classical guitar, and then I just, yeah, I kind of knew it was going to come back in a good shape, but just to hear it.
Cool.
I'm really into that song, so I hope people can enjoy that when that's released. It's got a lot of, it's kind of like, it's dealing with dark topics in that song.
Yeah.
You know, some of the lyrics are quite dark, but I think Johnny's lyrics, and a lot of the C3 songs kind of deal with sort of serious or dark issues, and especially Stargazing, it's kind of the song which, I mean, I would always say sad songs are the best, but I actually think the best songs are the songs which float the middle ground, and I think Stargazing is one of those. It's sort of, it's got that, the chorus is sort of got that euphoria. And although it's about a dark topic, and you know, I can't really say exactly, I mean, Johnny could obviously tell you more about the song in terms of its meaning, but it almost sounds quite positive in a way. And I think they're my favourite type of songs. And I think, especially just the energy that the band brings to the music anyway, like even if it is a dark topic, like it's always got an energy which can, you know, make you feel good.
Yeah. No, wicked. What do you reckon the quintessential See-Through song is? What would you, if someone said, what do See-Through sound like, what would you show them?
I'd put on Lyrical Force.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. This one's going to be a great one. This could be a long-winded one. What was your most embarrassing moment during your time with the band?
Oh yeah, so I've thought about this. So yeah, so when I joined the band, so most of you guys, you went to the same high school, and I didn't. So I think I felt like a little bit of an outsider, although we knew each other, and some of us went to middle school together. So, you know, you and Flay and Paula were in Lemma, and Johnny and Liam were in Hookworm, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like, okay, I'm a little bit out of the group here. So we were having a rehearsal, and after rehearsal, we drove down to Southwold Pier.
Yeah.
And I think at the time, you guys were quite into your sort of hippie experimentation, substances and that sort of thing. So I think it was Flatty's car, because I think it was a red VW, and that sounds like the sort of car Flatty drives.
100%.
And, yeah. And so I'd parked up next to the car. I can't remember exactly who was in there. So I was to the left, and I don't know if it was Liam or Flatty in the passenger seat. I think it might have been Liam, and he was making up this concoction for me to partake in. So I'd never done anything like this before, and but I thought, well, maybe I should have a go and see what it's all about. And, you know, like, yeah, so I took this thing, this big bottle of smoke. Anyway, so I'd inhaled that, and then conversation carried on, and I passed out basically, and I fainted and I hit the floor. But then I got up really quickly.
Oh my God, I remember this now.
And I just tried to pretend it didn't happen. So can you imagine it? I'm standing there, I've passed out, but just bam, right, I'm up again. Didn't happen. So I was standing outside of my car, right? So I'm standing next to my driver's.
Yeah, that was it.
And I think I was just so embarrassed. I was like, right. I think I might shoot off now, guys. And everyone was like, are you sure? You okay? He's like, yeah. And where's my car? Right. And I was standing next to my car. I was probably holding my driver's door. And I was like, I had to ask you where my car was, and you had to let me into my car. And at that point, I was still really embarrassed. I was like, shit, what am I going to do now? And I locked my door. And you guys were like, are you right, Ads? You're right. It's like, yeah. And then I drove home.
And you drove home?
With no word. And I just think, you must have been thinking, what the fuck? This guy's just passed out.
Man, I'd forgotten about that.
Couldn't even see where his car is when he's standing next to it. And then he drives home.
That wouldn't be the first time or the last time, right?
Yeah.
That was funny. I mean, do you remember when you had your escort van and we went to, we had a rehearsal and we all piled in the back and someone made a riff in the back and we sort of smoked that on the way to the pub that we were going to. We smoked that and we all bundled out of the back of this tiny little escort van. Mm. We went into the bar, queued up, which was Britain's longest bar. And we queued up to get a drink, and I think you were with somebody else. And then you eventually came in and you walked through, you went past the bouncer, and you'd obviously been outside having this riff or whatever with whoever you were out there with. And then I remember you saying, I'll just have an orange juice. And they gave you an orange juice, and you picked this orange juice up, and you were shaking. This orange juice was shaking so much it was coming out of the glass. And I looked at you and I was like, are you all right, mate? You're like, yeah, fine, mate. And then you casually sort of put the orange juice down on the table and then went onto your knees. And we were like, what the fuck's happening here? And then you crawled out for the entire bar. It's Britain's longest bar. I don't know if I mentioned that. And we were like, Christ, what's going to happen as he gets to the bouncer? And the bouncer at the door had obviously kind of seen you crawling out the way and opened the door for you. And you just crawled out. We're like, see you, mate. I mean, that was a good one.
I mean, I think actually that's got to be worse, isn't it? Because That was a bar full of people.
Well, I mean, that was funny. And there was another one. I mean, all of my favourite stories of you involve a car. Remember that show that we played and you accidentally drove forward rather than backwards and you went on a massive lump?
I was just going to say about that. Yeah, that just literally, I'd forgotten all about that and that just come back to me. So we were playing this house party. I don't know if we were staying there or if it was just going to be an all-nighter, but I decided I wanted to leave. And I got my car stuck on like a verge, basically. And it was, you know, balancing like a, scales. Yeah. So like, and embarrassingly, I had to get help to push it off this mount.
I was trying to tow your car off this lump.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my these stories normally involve a car or something.
Yeah, they definitely do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more, but that's probably a different episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's the funniest memory you've got in the band? Not necessarily the most embarrassing. What's the funniest time you ever think you had?
The funniest or fun?
Well, I mean, either or.
I mean, the funnest time was obviously Serbia and Exit Festival.
Yeah.
And the travel. I mean, I always like the travel and the stuff that happens outside the music. Like, I was just thinking, like, just little things, really. Like, when we used to be traveling, whether we were going to London and just... Remember, we always used to stop at that cafe, like, in the middle of the night.
Yeah, absolutely.
Off the A12. I don't know.
Do you remember when we went in there and we'd all been drinking and Paul sat down and we got some pints? It was about 2 or 3 in the morning and Paul then fell asleep in the chair and was snoring. Do you remember that? And then we all went out back into the car or van, whatever we were in.
We just left him in there.
Yeah, to trick him. And then the staff had to come out. The staff came out and said, excuse me, I think you've left your friend who's asleep in there.
I can't remember that.
Yeah, we always used to get Orwell Truck Stop, didn't it?
Yeah.
Classic fry up at 3 in the morning.
Funniest. I mean, yeah, I think some of the stories just, we have the same kind of, I think, was it Johnny who was telling the story about the PR woman in Norwich? I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember she was saying, I don't know if you're E17 or Rage Against the Machine.
Did she?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's... what was her name? I could tell you the name of the company. It was Impressive PR. I was like, well, I've worked with Muse and Coldplay and my name's so-and-so. And Paul, I don't give a fuck who you are. Like, I'm Paul Emery. I kind of think that's right. I mean, Jesus, if she couldn't... I mean, this was the time of the streets. It's like, we weren't that avant-garde.
Well, no, I was going to say that over the years, you and I had loads of meetings with industry types and agents, and they always sort of said the same thing to us, really, that they loved it, but they couldn't pigeonhole it, which was just mental. Yeah. And then you fast forward to now, and it seems to be the norm, and there's so many acts now who are far more eclectic and weirder than we ever were. I mean, do you think that if See-Through came out for the first time now, that it would be a different story, do you think?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were really well received locally. And to be honest, I think we would have been well received. I mean, I think these... Like wherever, even at the time, I mean, you just have to work hard, don't you, and play the shows. But
yeah,
because it was pre, you know, there was no social media, so we didn't have that extra platform back then. So, you know, it was very hard at the time for bands to replicate what they had in their local area.
Yeah,
because they didn't, you know, unless you were on a label, you had no marketing budget. And the press, I mean, I still believe the press. Not the press, sorry, the PR companies. I still think they're a bit of a joke, really, because at the end of the day, if you're press-worthy, you don't need them.
Mm.
And if you're not press-worthy, you're not going to get any press, and they don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
You know, press rights itself, and all these people, you know, trying to take... I mean, we had so many meetings, thousands that are trying to scam out of you, and it still goes on today, and I think you're paying for the advertising space, you know.
Yeah,
I'd love to see the figures of these blogs, you know, and see what their readership is like. I mean, I don't think they publish it, and I wonder why. You know, it's like, yeah, sorry, I've gone off on a rant there.
No, it's fine, mate.
I just, you know, I think it is insulting, even in those days when it's it was her job, right? And she yeah. was, and we, and like you say, we had so many of these meetings, like,
yeah,
oh, we just don't know what to do with you. It's like, because you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah,
you just, and it's, they're still the same. They want to pick up on somebody who's already buzzing, already hyping. Then they don't have to do anything.
Do anything, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's rolling. It's like, shit, yeah, people love this band. Oh, they don't have to do anything. And that's what they want to do. They don't want to work for it. And I know that's a rant. And you know, to a lot of people, that will sound bitter because, you know, I'm a musician who not many people have heard of. But I think that anyway.
Yeah. No, I think it's fair enough. Did you ever imagine that 20 years after the fact that the band would be back writing and recording and preparing to perform again? And why do you think that is? What is it about the band?
I didn't expect it really, because there was, I think when we did the, we kind of did a load of shows, which we kind of talked about or billed as reunion shows. And there was new music floating around at that time. And it didn't quite materialize, or it didn't quite develop. And maybe, you know, people were, I don't know, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like, because it didn't happen then, I was kind of like, okay, it's not going to happen. Like, that was it. So when these new, like the most recent tracks started to circulate, I was like, wow, this is cool. And I can't remember, what's the track? The first one that was kind of being sent around.
Learn to Love the Bomb.
Yeah. And it just, I think it just had that same energy and same feeling of like, when I heard that as when I heard the very first tracks, I was like, okay, it felt like this is back on it, back in the game. And I didn't expect it. And so, you know, and by this point I'd moved up to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a global pandemic hit us. So, you know, but I'm just proud to be, you know, associated with it and a part of the history. And I think it's cool that it's back together.
You certainly left a massive mark in the band's history during your time in the band. And you've had such a massive part to play in the overall sound. But what's the proudest or most unforgettable thing that you'll take from your time in the band?
I think just going back to Serbia again. I mean, from when I joined the band, I think it was, you know, I just wanted to be in the local scene. And like I said, I was going to all these gigs. But they were village halls. You know, people were playing in villages, you know, within a, I don't know, 20-mile radius. So, you know, when I went to Serbia, you know, it's the furthest I'd ever traveled from home, you know, and that was just really exciting. And, you know, something that would have never happened to me without being in the band. So that's probably like, yeah, the best thing.
Nice, yeah. I mean, it was quite a prolific thing for us. It's kind of hard to explain to other people what sort of happened on those 11 days, really, but like, well, the first time that we did it, but it was, you're right, like coming from what we were doing and where we lived and the area and what we were trying to achieve and in our heads failing, to suddenly go and do that, and that experience was...
Yeah, and we owe that a lot of that to Wombat, didn't we?
Yeah, it's Paul. Yeah,
arranged it. But you know, I think because of the travel time and the time we had outside of the gig, you know,
yeah,
I think a lot of my fondest memories of the band are the times we're not on stage, you know.
Yeah.
Just the funny things that happen, and you know, it's a bit of a social club, really, isn't it? It's like,
absolutely, mate. What's the one bit of advice you could offer to Baker, who's the new C3 bass player?
Just be very careful. Make sure you're the last to go to sleep if you're ever sharing a room with these guys. Mind you, if you share a bed with Paul, probably want to go to sleep first.
Great advice.
Yeah, so that would be my advice.
Now, imagine if you could put on your dream local, I mean Suffolk, show? Who's playing? Who's headlining? What are the support bands? What venues are at?
Well, it'd be Cherry Wax all day long.
Yeah.
Just Cherry Wax.
No other band.
No, I mean, again, I think, yeah, I just feel like I'm repeating other people's answers, but yeah, definitely Cherry Wax, Dacra. To be honest, I'd probably get Cherry Wax, Dacra, and Crawl Blind, which nice. Was the gig I think Lemon played, actually. There was four bands, which should have...
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah.
Which did happen at Rumbra.
Okay.
Rumbra Hub, but Cherry Wax didn't play. It was a... is it Alchemation? Is that what? It was a different lineup. So right. The whole gig had been billed as Cherry Wax's last ever gig.
Okay.
That was the whole promo campaign. And they didn't even play. It was members of Cherry Wax with potentially Ben Mullis,
right.
Or potentially not even a vocalist. I can't remember, actually. But yeah, I'd probably get that lineup that never was. So, but with Duncan and with Cherry Wax, so, you know.
Yeah.
And why not throw Lemmer in there as well?
Nice. And finally, mate, where can people find out more about Lyon and check out what you've got coming up and stuff?
Lyon.com, LEAONE.
Nice. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
It's been great talking to
you. You're welcome. Yeah, man, good catch up.
Wicked. We're out.